You've heard about VIP membership, you've thought about VIP membership, and now we're going to entice you to activate your VIP membership. Today, you can take $8 off a VIP membership. That brings our $9.99 monthly rate down to $1.99 for your first month, or apply it to our cheaper rates when you commit to 3 months or 1 year. That's $8 off with coupon code LIVECAST18. That's LIVECAST18, all one word, no space, LIVECAST18 in the coupon code box when you check out pwtorch.com/govip. What comes with the VIP membership? Well, first of all the PW Torch livecasts on one RSS feed that you can subscribe to. But as a VIP member, these plugs and similar plugs, along with the advertising and commercials, edited out of the show. So a streamlined experience. Plus, VIP after shows, exclusive post-show content just for VIP members. Also, VIP exclusive content that nobody else hears. The Wade Keller Hotline every single day that I put out, and the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin that I host, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables, including the Royal Rumble post-pay-per-view show recorded right after the Rumble that I host. Also, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop site, pwtorch.com, becomes pwtorchvip.com for VIP members, ad-free access to everything on the site, and so much more. Did I mention 30-plus years of archives? Retro radio shows going back to the early 1990s. Thousands upon thousands of hours of podcasts on any topic you can imagine in professional wrestling from a top trusted team. Go check out our benefits. Over 70 exclusive podcasts, over 25 live casts with plugs and ads removed, an RSS feed that lets you sign up for shows by theme, by title, or all at once, whatever is convenient for you. And yes, it's compatible with popular podcast apps on Apple and Android. So go check out details. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Choose your subscription option, 1 month, 3 month, or 1 year, and then enter coupon code LIVECAST18 to take $8 off the price of your subscription. We are journalists. We are independent analysts. We are forever students of the game, working passionately to help you understand pro wrestling better and enjoy it on a different level than most fans, by never stopping our own journey to learn and inquire and decipher everything going on in this fascinating genre. We are independent. We are unattached to and uncompromised by any affiliation with a pro wrestling company or dependence on cooperation with the companies we cover. So you can trust that what we're saying isn't hindered by conflicts of interest or fear of losing a current or future job in the industry. There's less hedging than you'll find elsewhere. You might have noticed that. No fanboy blind loyalty and no holding back. But we're also committed to fairness and exploring all sides of decisions that are made by promoters and wrestlers. So check out our complete coverage in print, text, and audio. pwtorch.com/govip. $8 off. A coupon awaits you. Act now before this offer expires. It's for a very limited time. The coupon code is LIVECAST18.
Welcome, everyone, again to PWT Talks NXT. I'm Kelly Wells. I'm your host. I do the NXT tracker on the show, I do that on the website, on the Torch. I take a wrestler and I talk about their prospects for the future. Today, I put one up for Johnny Gargano. It felt like the right time for him, so couldn't believe I hadn't done one for him before, but I had not. I did one for Ciampa, but not for Johnny. Glad I still had that one in my back pocket. But we're going to talk about this week's show and a few other items. I do have with me Tom Staup. Tom, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, I I always accidentally call them live, but they're live to me. I'm here in Orlando, Florida, and I cover the tapings that NXT does at Full Sail. As well as, and this is relevant for Thursday night, I do the MLW events as well. MLW is starting their road to the championship. The card looks incredible, and Austin Aries is on it, among many, many others. So you can look out for that on the Torch. You can follow me at Tom Staup. I recently tweeted a blog post of mine, just personal blog, but I fantasy booked Ronda Rousey's first year in WWE. It's a very exciting time for women's divisions in WWE, and that's probably going to be one of the most exciting things going on. So I'm genuinely interested what people think about what I think Ronda could do in her first year. So check that out and let me know what you think. And let's see, before we flip it over to Justin, I just wanted to mention that our statistician who is sitting out this week, Harley R. Padgett, just started a Ring of Honor podcast here on The Torch. It is VIP only, so go VIP. And you can hear every Monday he and Lola Bradbury talking about the week in Ring of Honor, just in time for Honor Club coming out. And just from my own point of view, I had a lot of fun listening to the show, even though I don't watch Ring of Honor as of yet. It was a really cool introduction. So from my perspective, if you also don't watch Ring of Honor, this is a cool way to break in. So there's that.
All right. And I want to mention that that show is called Talking Honor. So you can find that on the VIP segment. I was going to bring that up myself, but you got her covered. Talking Honor every Monday. Justin James is with us. Justin, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Justin James, and I'm the Torch's NXT TV correspondent. Watch it every week, report, and get back to you guys so that you get the play-by-play on the episode as well as analysis on the episode.
All right, and you can email us with any questions you have, whether or comments, things that we say you want us to expand on, or just questions you have, burning questions you have about the show, because we will cover them, and we've been able so far to cover every question. We just have two questions this week, so we'll be able to cover those questions as well. A couple of our regulars send us another couple of good questions. pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. If you want to get our perspective, we're wrong about basically every prediction, but we're right about a lot of analysis. So it's, I don't know, I think we do okay. pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Okay, so this week, the main story on this show probably was our Undisputed Era Sanity Tornado match, 3 versus 3. A lot of the hallmarks you would want to see in a tornado match. This was fun-ish, I suppose. Good main event. We did have two commercial breaks in the first 10 minutes of the match, which is a little strong for my tastes, but it was an okay main event. And of course, in the end, Adam Cole was on the losing side of something, so no surprises there. But Undisputed Era versus Sanity. Tom, what did you think of this one?
You know, I'm never really fair to matches like this. I feel like we get sure, the tornado tag with No Holds Barred added something different to it, but it feels like every week we see multiple six-man tags on multiple shows, and it just feels like a way to stack the ring with a bunch of people just so we can go, wow, look at all those people. And it was serviceable. It seemed like a fine showcase of what these guys can do. But I didn't really get too much more out of the match itself other than that. What I found odd, and Mauro seemed to kind of try to cover for this a little bit, but there wasn't too much he could do from my perspective. It was odd that just the whole tag title stipulation was just dropped when the two announced matches got combined into this.
Yeah, and didn't mention it at all, really.
Regal didn't mention it. It didn't get mentioned for the up until the match when Mauro said, Sanity is so something about like they're so hellbent on just getting revenge on Undisputed Era that they were willing to risk their tag title shot. But it hadn't been mentioned up until that point, unless I missed something. So that was strange. So that added to the fact that Sanity went over kind of makes me think that we're going to continue to see this feud for a while where, and of course it's easy to quickly go to, especially around this time of year, it's very easy to quickly to go to the, whoever loses is going up. So I was kind of thinking for a lot of the match, could this be their send off? Could they, maybe they're going to lose here? Not that you have to lose before you go up, but anyway, so that was where my mind was. And now I'm kind of thinking that we're going to get this maybe through until Takeover New Orleans.
Yeah, I definitely felt the same way when they didn't mention what this was about. I know why they do what they do. I know why they don't say that the title's not on the line anymore, because you don't want to deaden the moment. You want to make it seem like it's a bigger deal, not a lesser deal. So this was, you know, it's a perfectly good match to get if you're the if you're in the audience, but I feel like it's kind of, you got to walk the line there, because you're trying to give them something they want to see, but also downplaying what they're no longer getting. I'm going to say that I used to run, gosh, I probably mentioned this, but when I was a kid, I drew a whole bunch of wrestlers, and I came up with a battle system, and I did a wrestling federation with dice for like 10 years. I did this. And I will say, and the reason I bring this up is because you're talking about the six-man tag. I will say that I did constant six-man tags, because that way you could kind of further feuds without blowing off the big match before the main show. And it's weird if you've ever acted as a booker, even in a silly situation like that as a kid. It's like, yeah, you can kind of see why you get this absolute just way too many of this type of match. But this one I felt was somewhat justified, because these are legit three-guy teams. Nikki didn't show up at this, did she? That was kind of
odd. No, that was a little conspicuous.
Maybe they're just kind of
disappointed.
Yeah. Go ahead, Justin.
So, yeah, I also had the same questions about the tag titles, because I was like, are the titles still on the line? My fantasy booker in this said that the tag titles were still on the line. Adam Cole would take the pin, and Fish and O'Reilly would look at Cole and be like, we are sick and tired of you being such a loser. That was my fantasy booking, leading to like a Randy Orton versus Legacy WrestleMania match. Right. I'm just so tired of Adam Cole, baby. I feel which one of you guys said, but you talked about, you know, that this match was just about 15 minutes and allowed everybody to show what they could do. I mean, Killian Dane looked amazing in this match, right? He looked amazing. You know who didn't? Adam Cole, baby.
Yeah. For me, this was all about Dane and O'Reilly. They really shined.
O'Reilly and Fish are so talented, and they're talented in different ways, so I can't pick which one I think is better. And they complement each other so well.
Absolutely.
But Adam Cole, you know, this is like the War Games match, where Cole had the opportunity to show everything in his arsenal. And what he showed is that I literally couldn't count the number of enziguris and super kicks he did. But outside of that, it was like stuff you learn in your first week at, you know, Booker T's wrestling school. And that was it. He's got a shoulder break. Adam Cole doesn't have a moveset. He's literally more limited than John Cena or Roman Reigns. It is embarrassing. Maybe he has this great moveset he showed off in other federations, but not in NXT. The guy's a bum.
It's with guys like Cena and especially Reigns, I get it, because it's kind of a forced limitation on these guys. With Reigns, they don't want him to do all these transition moves, because they want it to look like he has, that everything he does has impact. So I kind of get it with him, and at least he's, you know, and he's perfectly good at executing the moves that he does do. It's tiresome to watch those matches for me, but I get it from a booking standpoint. For a heel like Cole to be so limited just doesn't make a ton of sense.
It's not just that he's a heel. Physically, and I hate bringing up his physique, because I don't like to discuss people's physiques, but his physique requires him to have a much bigger moveset.
Yeah. He looks like a wrestler through and through. Absolutely. So,
what?
He looks like he should have more.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He needs to be like one of these guys who can use leverages or be bouncing off the ropes. He needs something, because the thought of him going toe to toe with a Killian Dane in the ring is preposterous.
Right. He's got to embrace a larger moveset, or he's got to embrace a Miz total chicken shit attitude. But Miz has now Miz has a decent
moveset.
But but yeah, he's got to embrace one side or the other, I think. And I feel we're hard on him, and but we just all I feel like we all want him to succeed, right? I mean, we're all on his side.
I don't dislike Adam Cole the person in the slightest. You know, I'm not bagging on Adam Cole the person, but it's actually getting tiresome, right? Like week after week, you're like, what in the world did anyone see in this guy? Why is he so touted? Why do the fans cheer him? What is anyone seeing in this guy?
Yeah,
I'm just not getting it.
I feel like it's tapering off a little, but it's hard to say right now because they are in a very, very strange venue, I thought.
I dislike this venue.
Kind of a – it's neat to look at, but, like, acoustically it's very strange. I don't know what's going on with this place.
I don't like the acoustics, and what I especially don't like, even on the aesthetics, is that they've rotated the ring 90 degrees in terms of heel face corners. And you don't have that strong visual of the faces always being the top left corner facing the hard camera.
You know, something had me off tonight, and I didn't know what, and I wonder if
that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. Like, most people don't realize that WWE does this, but the top left corner is always for the faces, top bottom right corner is always for the heels. So you see the heels back, and it gives you a better view of the heels cheating in the corner, right. But it lets you see the face, you know, the face in the corner begging for the tag and stuff. It's this really subtle thing they do. But it throws you off now that the ring's rotating 90 degrees. You know, as a viewer, it's like when you see yourself when you see a picture of yourself instead of yourself in the mirror, the picture just looks wrong.
Right. All right. So that was our main event. Sanity goes over, and I agree. This will probably be a continuation of that feud. So, let me give you a task. Pick out a wine you're going to love, but there's a catch. It has to be one you haven't had before. Where would you start? There are too many. This is where Wink comes in. That's W-I-N-C, which is a meeting of the words wine and incorporated. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine, and their experts select wines matched to your taste and personalized for you and ship them to your door starting at $13 a bottle. This will be the best day of your month. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz, answering simple questions that your average store clerk isn't going to think to ask you or translate into a recommendation. These are questions like, how do you take your coffee? Or do you like blueberries? Wink then sends you wines curated to your taste based on your answers, and the more wines you rate, the more personalized your selections become. Each month, there are new delicious wines like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. There are no membership fees. You can skip any month. You can cancel at any time. Shipping is covered. And if you don't like a bottle, they'll replace it with one you love. No questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/pwtorch and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/pwtorch for $20 off. trywink.com/pwtorch. Do it. I am going to do it. I love a super dry Cab Sauv, barrel-aged, oaked, smoky. It pairs with my mouth. That's what it pairs with. I love it. So, the next match that we are going to talk about is Heavy Machinery against Moss and Sabatelli. Second time we've gotten this one on TV. I assume they've worked countless matches against each other in all the months they've been there at the center. This was interesting. Lots of go-away heat for Sabatelli, I thought, from the audience with the, he sucks, Tino sucks chants. And then the yes chants after Moss kind of left him high and dry at the end of this. I thought this was maybe a little premature to break up a team that seemed to be finally kind of clicking, but you know, I don't know what they want to do with these guys. Maybe they'll both be better off, maybe not. We've seen it happen both ways. So Heavy Machinery goes over Moss and Sabatelli in, I don't know, 8 to 10 minutes, nothing crazy, probably not even that long. Tom, go ahead.
Man, Sabatelli really, from what I've seen, he divides audiences. You get those that go away heat. I think one of my favorite things I ever heard somebody shout at him was that he looks like a server at the Olive Garden. It's just, Right? It's so random, but it fits perfectly. But there's that contingent of the audience, at least in my experience, and I'm one of these people, that just sees such a physical and charismatic gift in this guy. And his theme song's kind of cool. The motion of, like, I don't even know what they call it, making it rain, I guess. Like, he seems cool, and he's sort of got this inflated Shia LaBeouf that he carries around with him. And so I think they're definitely going to have to do a sell job if they want to go the way of Buddy Murphy with him. And that might be a bad example since Buddy Murphy hasn't been on TV in forever after his injury. But he's had a major presence at the live shows, and hopefully it's only a matter of time before we see him again. Anyway, not going off on that tangent. It reminded me of that split, and if they really go through with it, I see the potential, but they do have work to do. This didn't give me too much else. I think that's really the focus. I'm not sure if they continue, maybe do some singles matches with Heavy Machinery, or boy, does Heavy Machinery just move up. The tag division right now seems very crowded, which is why I think they might be going this direction with Moss and Sabatelli. That was kind of the impression I got. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. If you think they're done, or if they'll do this kind of as a soft breakup and then maybe do more. I don't know. I don't know that this team's been together long enough on TV to warrant a long breakup phase, but I don't know. Justin, is this the last time we've seen them together?
I suspect it's the last time we've seen them together. You know, I hate to say it, but one of the things I liked about this team, I don't want them to break up, is because they have this thing that just works, the whole deal with the Maserati. You know, it just kind of works. It's such a dumb little thing. You know, the thing with them, they share the Maserati, but yet every week the Maserati is a different color when you see it.
That is amazing. Like,
yeah, I mean, either they're taking this thing to where, you know, remember that place in the 80s, the one-hour paint job place.
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't know the name of which I know.
It's like Monaco or something. But, you know, I like this team. They've just got this. There's just something about it. And I don't know if you guys have been to an NXT live event, but this team, especially Riddick Moss, is just an excellent heel team for working the crowd. They know what to do to get the crowd angry and bring legitimate heat on themselves. And that's a valuable talent. You know, it's like, every promotion needs somebody like that, like how the circus needs the clowns. You know, they're not the most, you know, visible person, but they're a key player. And I like this team. I don't think it's the right time to break it up. It's one of these cases where I don't know who the heel is in the breakup, because Moss is not a natural face. He's a good heel. And Sabatelli is definitely getting some sort of major heat for some reason I don't understand, because I think he's, you know, reasonably talented in the ring, and his character is a reasonably well-performed heel character. There's nothing bad about the guy. I don't think he sucks at all.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yeah, it's. I feel like they're going with Sabatelli being the face because he looks it, and they're very much cognizant of what these guys look like and how they want to present them. I don't boo anybody. I've been to a lot of shows. I have never booed anybody. It's just not in me. I just don't do it. I don't know why, but I don't. But I am definitely somebody who, when people boo Tino and say Tino sucks, I sympathize a little bit, because I have been to a couple of shows, and in both cases, Sabatelli was the low point of what I saw. But this was perhaps earlier in his development, where they were probably working more on character than anything, and he I have to have mentioned this before, but at one point in a match against Rich Swann, he held a in an abdominal stretch for at least 3 or 4 minutes. It was mystifying. But you're watching, you've just got this begrudging appreciation for the ability to just do something that long, to piss off people that much. But
I hear you. He's not their best Parker by any means.
Right.
You've got a roster with, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa on it. Tino Sabatelli's not going to be mentioned in the same dress as them, other than as an opponent.
I feel like right now this was the right time. I thought that this was the right situation for him, because you take somebody who's got some limitations, but they can also generate heat, and they can be in a tag team where they don't have to do the heavy lifting. Moss is a better worker, and he's a better heel, but for a while, Sabatelli can stand behind that while he continues to develop behind the scenes. I don't see the downside of what they were doing. So unless they just have bigger plans in mind for Moss and they don't care about Sabatelli, I don't know if that's true, but that would be the only other explanation here.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, so that's Heavy Machinery against Moss and Sabatelli. It's funny that Heavy Machinery were kind of just also rans in this story. We barely mentioned them, but I did really like Tucker Knight doing the cannonball to the outside.
That was gorgeous.
Yeah, that was fun. I haven't been like these guys' biggest fans or anything like that, but they're starting to get a little bit interesting with what they do. This is like a Baron Corbin situation where I was never into him, and he's not my favorite or anything now. But you find an interesting way to do the stuff you always do, and people will be all about it. He was in that match with Austin Aries, and he did a deep six outside the ring. This is a move he does literally every match, and he did it outside the ring, and everybody talked about it like it was the greatest thing ever. So, and I was like, he does that every day. He just did it in a different place. But that's the kind of thing that can get you over, and that's what I thought about. It's literally the moment I thought about when Tucker Knight threw that cannonball down. So, yeah, these guys are growing on me, which is great. So that's what NXT is for. Okay, so we had Gargano and Almas, continuation of this feud. I like that there was some kind of response to this, and I like that it wasn't just some, wow, they earned each other's respect, and then we move on. I don't want them to earn each other's respect. I want them to talk about wins and losses, and that's what we did. So we got all the pieces that we wanted here. Both of their seconds were there. Candace came out again to another great reaction. And Gargano, I feel like he's growing a little on the mic, which is definitely the weakest part of his game up to this point. Almas is still standing behind Zelina Vega, but that's working, and it's just fine with what they're doing. So, a lot of follow-up here. No obvious hints of where they're going for the next takeover, if this is going to happen before takeover. Lots of moving parts here because you got Ciampa standing in the background and all that. But on the Gargano stuff, Tom.
I'm super into it. This was my favorite part of the night. I'm so glad the story's being continued because even if we weren't into it already after the takeover match, I feel like so many people are intrigued by this feud. Including the women being involved, and yeah, Ciampa in the background too. And if he's not ready to come back quite yet, which I'm assuming is the case, I'm glad that they at least pulled the trigger on him being a presence in the story. And you're absolutely right. Johnny's promo was very good. I was really pleased, since it wasn't clear that that's definitely where they were going when it was just Johnny in the ring. I was really pleased to see Almas. Yes, he was still standing behind Vega, but I just felt like he was so absentee over the past couple of months leading into TakeOver that I just get happy every time I see him now. And especially since he retained, I feel like this is really good for his legitimacy as champion. you know, it's just the energy feels different every time I hear his theme now. And I think that's a really good sign for at least how I'm perceiving him, and hopefully how others are as well. And I guess we don't know when this match is going to be. I know we got a couple title matches announced for next week, but this is not one of them. They did do two sets of tapings at or it was like a two-part taping at Center Stage to carry us into the March tapings. Do we think this is going to happen at the tapings? Do we think this is going to happen at TakeOver? Either way, there's time in the meantime, and I felt like it was teased for maybe a match between LeRae and Vega, or perhaps what they've been doing at live events, which is a mixed tag between the two. They've been promoting that very heavily. It's actually coming to Orlando on Saturday, and I'm bummed that I'm going to have to miss it. Although, as a very interesting side note, they used Bianca Belair in an email blast to promote that event. So I thought that was a cute little detail. Sorry, not a cute little detail. I don't know why that word came out. But anyway, I'm excited. What do you guys think?
Yeah, go ahead, Justin.
I really got nothing else to add there.
Okay. Wow. That yeah, everything.
Tom was on a roll there.
He does have a way of covering every part of the base.
Including email blasts. Yeah.
Yeah, right. this was a fun segment, too. Almas was still full heel. Like I said, it's a lot of times in these matches, they try to tell the story, or at least the announcers go by it. Wow, he won his respect and everything like that. And I like that they're back to basics here, talking about faces and heels being themselves, and winning is everything. And that's the way they all kind of sold it. Like Johnny said, he was happy he gained their respect, but he was still on his mission. So I don't know where this is going to go from here. So this is where I'm going to mention that Lars Sullivan, for his sort of weird, conspicuous absence, is due to injury. He's got a knee injury and apparently some other unspecified health issue. I don't know what that means, but there's a source out there, credible typically, that's saying this. And the rumored plan was that he was going to face Almas at TakeOver New Orleans, which I think is a really weird way to go the night before WrestleMania, if that's going to be your WrestleMania as NXT. I think it's a perfect match if Sullivan's a face, and a terrible match if he's a heel. So they would have had a lot of work to do. Apparently this is scrapped because Sullivan won't be around for enough of the tapings, and therefore will miss a lot. As a result, I kind of saw what is probably a spoiler, and I won't share that with you about other plans that changed and are in motion now. But yeah, that's kind of where that's going. So this Gargano Almas thing, I felt the same in that I thought that they were heading towards a mixed tag match. I thought that we were going to get that. I thought for a second that would be announced for next week by the end of this segment. I assume they will show the world that match at least once or twice. But happy it's still going on. I assume if Ciampa's ready, then he works with Gargano at New Orleans, and then we move on. We also had Bianca winning in a squash. I don't know if there's anything to mention about Bianca unless you guys stop me immediately otherwise. Okay, perfect. And we've got Roddy against Itami that happened on 205 Live. Wanted to bring this up. This was a big surprise. Roderick Strong beating Hideo Itami, who I thought was one of the favorites in that Cruiserweight title tournament. It just seems like everything's weird about this, because Roddy goes over. We got hints that this might happen right before, because they showed a bit of Roddy's mini documentary before this match. So I thought, God, they want us to take him seriously on this. He could actually go over. Itami, after this match, after he lost this match, throughout the course of the next day, he tweeted, it's over. That's all he tweeted. It's over. And then I guess later tweeted, but not done yet. So I don't know what this troll is doing to us all. He's working us for sure, but I don't know what this means.
That sounds like an Itami Strong feud.
Yeah, it probably so. And so, and certainly that's one I'll watch because this match was good. I did see on our own site, Zach Haydorn does the recaps at the Torch, and he mentioned that it seemed like Itami was holding back in comparison to previous matches that he's seen of these two guys working. And I could agree there. This was a very good match, very solid match, but yeah, I feel like they could do more. Roddy also had an unfortunate moment where he yelled out, "Come on, Kenta!" And then he had to remember that the name was Itami that he was supposed to be yelling out. So I don't know. Anything on Roderick Strong and the many, many things that he's got going on the show?
Well, I guess one of them is no longer occurring, the Lars feud that apparently seemed to be bubbling up. You know, I'm going to be guilty of predicting a send-off again. Every single week I'm like, oh, this will be this person's last match in NXT. Just last week I was saying I don't think this is going to be a call-up to 205 or any kind of main roster for Roddy. I think it's just a cameo, especially because they were referring to him as NXT superstar Roderick Strong. But after he went over and after they showed that video package, I'm thinking that maybe he is moving up and the UK title match is his big match send-off to 205, which might not be such a death kiss anymore now that we have learned Vince has completely handed over control of 205 to Triple H.
Yeah,
who,
as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was surprised, but I'm pleased the general manager reveal drew me in. And I thought, okay, I'll just watch this one episode because I got all excited about 205 when it started after the CWC. Love the roster and the character based stuff just really turned me off. I just decided there was too much wrestling in my week. I wasn't going to tune in for it. And then Drake Maverick announces this tournament and I'm like, oh, hey, that's what I liked last year. So, or 2 years ago now, shoot. So I'm definitely going to tune in, and the matches have been incredibly good. I would even say that Kalisto Dorado before this one outdid them, but I'm thinking that I'm back on the 205 train. I hope that they can keep this up. The finish was really a surprise, and I was also picking Itami to win this or at least go to Mania with it. So I guess now I'm kind of saying it kind of reminds me of Tessa Blanchard and Kairi Sane in the Mae Young Classic. It was two people that you really wanted to see.
You've got a great first round match. Absolutely.
And so this was like your guaranteed great first round match. Again, I already said that, you know, I don't think it was the best that we've seen yet, but it was still very, very solid. And both of the guys, you're like, man, it would just be a shame if one of them didn't make it to the second round, but here we are, one of them's gotta not make it. I don't know. I think Roddy will do well in the tournament. Perhaps this will even be a Mania match for him. Perhaps, I'm not sure how the brackets are aligned, but perhaps against Cedric Alexander, or maybe even TJP. They're kind of building him up, but I'm intrigued. I think Itami is just sort of messing with us. I'll refrain from going off on another tangent there, but I just think Itami's messing with us.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, I know. Okay, Justin, I know your plate's pretty full, but did you catch any of this with the Roddy and Itami or any of that?
No, I didn't catch it, but I will say that I've thought for quite some time that it's time for Strong to move on from NXT. It's very clear that they're not going to put a belt on him anytime soon. And the longer he stays around without a belt, the more he looks like a chump. So it's time for him to move on before he gets devalued further.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I've always advocated for guys that if they're not going to win a title down there, don't keep him down there forever. I feel that way about Adam Cole right now. I don't know what he's going to do up in the main roster, but I don't think that he is in the cards at all. And I just don't know if it's doing him any good being down there. But we've talked about Cole, so let's not. That's kind of what's going on the show. I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to pull up our listener emails here. We got emails from two of our old standbys, Dylan DeBaca and Andrew Gambill. First of all, from Dylan, hey guys, who would you see Ricochet feuding with first? Would love a Ricochet Adam Cole feud, or what about Lio Rush? They could have some great high flying matches. Thanks again, guys. I will say first off that I wouldn't be shocked if Ricochet buzzed through Lio Rush right away. Lio Rush right now obviously is in no place to have a feud or any kind of meaningful match, but he can still have a great match with somebody. So that's somebody that even if they only give it like 6 or 7 minutes, Ricochet can have a great match with first. As far as feuds, that's going to be really interesting to see what they do with him. I don't know. Tom, take it away.
I could see him having a couple of enhancement matches first just to show off what he can do and let the announcers bring everybody up to speed on who he is if certain people aren't already aware. The Lio Rush thing, if he ever, like, not that I never want to see him have a match with Lio Rush, but if they have a competitive match, I feel like that's the kind of thing that's going to send me into a cradled fetal position with 1982 Mid-South on loop on the network. Just remind me why I like wrestling and the storytelling of it. So I'm hoping that they can give Ricochet some adversaries that he can pull that have different styles that he can play off of in a different way, that he doesn't have to, you know, like at when I saw him wrestle Shane Strickland at MLW, you can tell that they had a little session backstage where he said, okay, here's my signature spot where we do all these flips that don't actually have any offensive strategy whatsoever. They just look cool. And this is the little, you know, sequence that we're going to do. I just really hope we don't see that from him, because I want to be optimistic about this. I want to see all the things that about him that are good, because there are many, many things. Anyway, short answer, now that I've given the long preface, I'm just gonna say Velveteen Dream and people's imaginations run wild, because when I think of talking about himself, I guess bragging about himself in like a babyface kind of way, if he can pull that off, and Velveteen Dream interrupting him. And yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that, because I feel like I can hear the promo echoing in my head already. And I want to let about how awesome that could be as well.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
You know, Tom, you really made me. I was thinking Velveteen Dream as well.
Oh, I'm stomping on you again.
No. I was thinking of Velveteen Dream mainly just from a booking and roster standpoint. Dream is kind of twisting in the wind at this very moment. Like, you know, he had two great matches with Black and Gargano, right? Really just outstanding matches. We know the guy can work. Put him in the ring with Ricochet, and he's, you know, he can do business there, right? But the other thing I was thinking of, you know, you mentioned contrasting styles, and Lars Sullivan would be a great body for Ricochet to just bounce off of. You know, he does his flippy thing, Sullivan does his Sullivan thing, and that's, you know, it's a classic formula that just always works in wrestling. You know, the big guy, the little guy, it works. I could see either one of those being good. Lio Rush, yeah, If Ricochet goes more than like 2 minutes against Lio Rush, it makes Ricochet look weak. Fabian Aichner, that would be a fun match. Fabian Aichner, you go more than 2-3 minutes against Aichner, you look weak right now. So, yeah, there's outside of Cassius Ohno, there's no real gatekeepers in NXT in the singles division at the moment, where you can have that match and it goes more than a couple minutes and you don't look weak. Cassius Ohno is the only person that you can beat in 5 to 10 minutes and not look bad. So that's what I'm thinking, Dream or Sullivan.
Ohno definitely came to mind. I like your idea of Sullivan because we saw a little bit of that with his match against Lio Rush. And I'm not sure tall it was. And I'm not sure how tall Ricochet is. I don't think he's particularly short. He's definitely not particularly short. I don't think he's particularly tall. I think I've only seen him wrestle people that are more his height, so it's kind of hard to tell. But it would be kind of like the David and Goliath story. And no matter what the match quality is, I always like the David and Goliath story. I think I've told you guys off air, and here I'll just damn myself in public and say I actually like Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez because of the David versus Goliath story. That's how much I like it. I even like that cruddy match that everybody else hates. And I can just totally hear Sullivan clubbing Ricochet to the mat. You know, I'm sure Ricochet would be competitive, but clubbing him to the mat after an acrobat display and Mauro just saying, well, welcome to NXT, kid.
Yeah, I don't like that match. I want to get that out of the way. But I do love the David and Goliath story. David versus David and Goliath versus Goliath are both good stories, and I like them both equally quite a bit. But yes, I'm with you in that can this little guy overcome everything sort of thing. One of my favorite moments that they ever did on Nitro was Rey Mysterio just going crazy and kicking the shit out of all of the main three NWO guys, and Bischoff apparently was furious about it, but it got, and Ray was already pretty over, but it was a huge, huge thing for them and for him. And I never tired of that. And I never tired of him. He's still one of my favorite wrestlers. So, yeah, good stuff there. I didn't have an answer for this yet. This one came in late. You both gave me a pretty good answer here. I don't know who goes over in a Ricochet Dream feud because they both. I don't know if you want to have Ricochet lose right away, but if he's going to have to, then absorbing one to the Velveteen Dream is just fine. So that could be fun.
And he's 5'10", I just saw.
5'10", so you were right. He's perfectly average size, average height anyway. So there you go. We had a question also from Andrew Gambill, and it's lengthy, but it is a good one. Hey, guys, this week I'm curious to know if you think more wrestlers should fail to win the NXT championship. Gargano's loss seemed fresh because it felt like the first time in a while someone failed to win a title at TakeOver. After doing some research, I realized it wasn't quite true, but it happens a lot. For a while, it felt like every time a new challenger came up, they won the title. Looking back on TakeOvers, Finn has the most successful defenses with 3, Rude and Neville have 2, Joe, Owens, and Almas have 1, and Shinsuke and Zayn never successfully retained at a TakeOver. I know there's a desire to get guys to the main roster as soon as possible once NXT has someone else to carry the baton, but wouldn't it add to the prestige and even the excitement and unpredictability of TakeOver matches? Or does it always have to be the shiny new toy as champion for the champion to add enough excitement? Curious to hear your thoughts. Sincerely, Andrew Gambill. I love this question, and I think about this stuff a lot. I always thought, especially early on when I was trying to calibrate my thinking and understand what NXT was all about, when I got into it in 2013 or whatever it was, that there weren't going to be a lot of successful defenses, and once that guy lost, they were probably going up because you were in the main event picture for a reason. But yeah, I get what he's saying for more successful defenses. Now, there aren't a lot of takeovers in comparison to main roster specials, which is a good thing because oversaturation would kill the brand. It just would. Especially given the size of the roster. But I think it's a fair question to be whether there should be more successful defenses, or at least whether they should call attention to the fact to the that these guys have had successful takeover defenses. Because if you've had three and you're the only one who has, that's worth bringing up. And in Japan, New Japan especially, they love bringing up number of successful title defenses as a major, major selling point. So, Justin, what do you think there?
You know, what this reader described is how NXT used to work before the what I would call disastrous Finn Balor title reign. And I'll call it disastrous because in terms of weakening the product, it was, I mean, Finn Balor is a fine champion, but his title reign really weakened the product because you had the flip-flop with Samoa Joe. And, yeah, it was cool that Joe won the title at a house show, which added some unpredictability to it, but then it bounced back and forth between Finn and Joe. They had this constant series of matches. Then Nakamura and Joe, constant series of matches. Then Bobby Roode, and then Roode had the title not long, dropping it to McIntyre, dropping it to Almas. Since Finn Balor, it used to be, you know, Neville held the championship and was undefeated during that time for right around a year. Zayn lost the title quickly, but there was a reason for it, right? It was the Owens build, and Owens had it for the much better part of a year. You know, Big E, Seth Rollins, Bo Dallas, they all held that title nearly a year. So, yeah, this is the way NXT used to work, and it was one of the things that early fans heaped praise on the show for, is that not only did the champions hold the titles for a very long time, but they would be 100% undefeated during their entire reign in both title and non-title matches. Right? You know, Neville didn't just hold the title for a year. He was undefeated for a year. And that's so important to make the title look important. You know, it's so important to make the title look like a prize. It's important to make the champion look strong, right? Like, you don't become champion as a fluke. You don't become champion, you know, even the heel champions in NXT held the title through clean wins for a long time. And that's big. And I think that NXT kind of got away from that. I think a lot of that feels like Vince, and a lot of that feels like, you know, the demands on the roster to produce people to send up to the main roster. It feels like a lot of things, but I'm not thrilled with it either. In fact, it's one of the things that the kind of current era of NXT has turned me off a bit.
And, you know, doing more takeover shows has to be part of it too, mm-hmm. because when you're moving things forward at this speed, I feel like the writers just naturally adopt this thing where it's like, they don't calibrate to the amount of time that's happening. They calibrate to the amount of big shows they have to fill. So, I'm so sorry. That is my laundry. It is so loud. that is on my end. But, yeah, it's nature of the beast when you start getting more shows that you have to fill. But I like this from Andrew too. I like having more successful defenses. I like that you don't have a lot of them, because I feel like, but that's because I feel like it should be very, very hard to get a title match in the first place. I feel like most of the time, I know they want to have people look like a fighting champion, but I actually think the title is done a better service if most of the matches are non-title matches and you really, really have to work your ass off to get a title match. So that way, if you get knocked down, it's a big, big deal because you had to work so hard even to get that match. Tom, what do you think?
You guys covered it beautifully. I wholeheartedly agree, and I think in the odd world of NXT, where they also have to contend with, or not contend with, but, you know, as Justin said, produce people for the main roster, or, you know, let go of them when it's finally time for them to move up and start making some more money. You know, it's kind of a circumstantial thing too, because we talked very recently about the transition from Neville to Zayn to Owens, and part of why Zayn's title win was so momentous was because of Neville had had a long reign before it, and all of the champions before him had had long reigns. And then part of why Owen's win was so momentous was because it was the first time we'd seen such a brief reign. And we agreed, you know, I believe it was Justin who said that Zayn might be the best NXT champion we've had. And even though Zayn wasn't the pick of any of the rest of us, we would agree that he's definitely up there despite the short reign. So I think it's circumstantial in a lot of cases. And I guess in the case of Zayn, we have, you know, with years of reflection, we have a full story that we can put together now. With the more recent example of Drew McIntyre, boy, I still don't know what they're doing. Maybe they just got really excited about Almas. Maybe they wanted Drew to, maybe they had a redemption story plotted out for Drew. He did get that one successful defense against Roddy in a very good match. But that was on the free TV too, which I shouldn't be discredited like you're saying, but yeah, I'm also guilty of naturally thinking about those big shows as the places where you do those things. So, you guys pretty much covered it, but I would just add that circumstantial aspect that sometimes the brief reigns can be, great for storytelling as well.
All right. That is our show. Thank you for the questions again. Good stuff, fun to cover, and always interesting to see the first show of a taping and see just kind of where we think this might go. A lot of 8 shows left before WrestleMania, 7 or 8 shows, so plenty of time, 2 full tapings yet to go to see where we're going for New Orleans. I don't know. I'm pretty bullish on how this is going to go. And I think, I don't know. I just feel like the Lars Sullivan injury is changing a lot of things. And I wish I hadn't seen some of the spoilers I saw, but we'll see how that goes next week. And I will not be coy about it any further. So, yeah, thank you guys for tuning into our show, PWT Talks NXT. Check us all out on Twitter. My name is Kelly Wells, and I am on Twitter at Spooky Milk. And I'm mostly reacting to things that I see, but every now and then I'll tweet out something of my own. Tom, go ahead.
I am at Tom Staup. Go ahead and give me a click. Let me know what you think about the Ronda Rousey ideas. Tell me what you think you have, what your ideas are. Like I mentioned last week, tell me what wines you're getting from Wink. And and look for the MLW report. And just since we're at the end of the show, I am going to squeeze in something that I will probably I'm not going to mention a lot and might not even mention again. Check me out at speedwayvideo.org. I film at the New Smyrna Speedway, and we're heading into the World Series. We call it the World Series of Asphalt, and it's sort of in tandem with the Daytona 500 that's coming up. And I put my race videos up at speedwayvideo.org. I'll be plugging them on Twitter too, so you can't miss them. If you're into stock car racing, I think I do an okay job. So if you can't make it down to the track and, you know, smell the fumes and feel the ground pound yourself, check out the videos.
So those shades on your profile picture, that's what that's from.
That's from well, racing. I even get made fun of for those at the track too, so that's definitely not.
All right, Justin, go ahead.
So, Tom, is that Smyrna's in Smyrna, Georgia?
Good question. That's New Smyrna Beach on the east coast of Florida, right near like maybe 20 minutes outside Daytona.
Because I drive a Hellcat Challenger.
Oddly for having a job at a racetrack, I am not a car person, so I wouldn't know whether we run those or not.
It's 707 horsepower of pure masculinity, I'll have you know.
Well, you can come out to the spectator races. I'll film you.
Okay. Sounds good. You got me intrigued here.
All right, guys. We're all talking cars, so I feel like the show's probably over. And that is it. We'll see you next week on PWT Talks NXT. Fun episode, but we'll see where it goes from here. Cheers, everyone.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.